Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How well did you sleep last night? And could your body's clock be out of sync with the world you live in? Regular sleep is as vital to our physical and emotional health as it has ever been, but many of the things that make the modern world so productive, from artificial lighting to jet travel to video and computer screens, can wreak havoc on the clocks within our brains that govern slumber and wakefulness. Michael Turman has been studying this for years and is now head of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center. His new book, written with co-author Ian McMahon, is called Chronotherapy: Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Michael, welcome to Think.
Great to be with you.
Let's start by talking a bit about what's called chronobiology. What is it and how did it emerge as a field of study?
Chronobiology, chrono means time, of course, looks at the long-term trends across the day and the night of our physiology and our behavior, and indeed our mental state and our vigor. It was first noted, believe it or not, in plants, which would raise their leaves and lower their leaves once a day. And it was discovered that that would happen even if the plants were kept in a dark box. That meant there was an internal clock. And that clock is all pervasive throughout life forms.
So how do circadian rhythms in humans change naturally as we grow and age?
Well, largely the circadian rhythm is preset genetically, and circa means approximately one day. Circadian means that no individual has an inner clock that runs exactly at 24 hours. So some of us are born with the propensity to cycle slightly longer than 24 hours, say 24 hours and 5 or 10 minutes. Those are the lucky ones among us. Others are born to cycle at 25 hours, which means that we're losing a whole hour a day of internal time. Now, this is genetically determined, but it does change throughout the lifespan, as you suggested. And the most marked change we've noted is at puberty. At puberty, the clock slows down even more than it was in childhood. And that means that the inner clock signal to go to sleep and to wake up come later during the day. And that's going to persist throughout adolescence into the early 20s. And believe it or not, we're not quite back to normal until we're in our 40s. So there's an example of how the clock is predetermined at birth, but it does change across the lifespan.
So, Michael, you describe in the book three sort of natural variations in chronotypes. Tell us about owls and larks and hummingbirds.
Okay. The vast majority of us who get along with the outside world, who can make it alert to work by 9 in the morning, and who can fall asleep normally at around 11 o'clock, these are the hummingbirds. And that's the vast majority of us. But the minorities, the larks and the owls, still number millions of people in the United States. The larks have the shortest running clocks of all of us. So they may be the 24-hour and 5 or 10-minute clocks. Mm-hmm. And they have an easy time to adjust to the day-night cycle. Because they're only making a 5 or 10 minute correction each day physiologically. But they tend to get sleepy early in the evening, and they're up bright and alert before the rest of us. So it's normal for them to wake up at 5 a.m. and raring to go. At the opposite end of the spectrum are the owls, and it's obvious what we mean by owl. These are people who have the slower inner clocks, and they're having trouble falling asleep till much later than is practical for a normal work day. A mild case might be 1 a.m. A severe case might be 3 a.m. I've seen further than that. And when you think about having to wake up in the morning at 7 in order to be at the office at 9, that is effectively truncating the amount of sleep you can have during the week. And so the owls are in a fix. They don't really fit with the requirements of contemporary urban society.
And yet you note here that owls are sometimes unfairly maligned as being unproductive or being lazy when there's no evidence that that is in fact the case.
Well, they're not necessarily lazy, except they'll appear to be lazy if they're trying to conform with the outside world,
yeah,
because they're zonked a lot of the time. Depending on which owl you are and what social environment you live in, you might find a subculture of owls where you can function effectively and professionally and personally at odd hours of the day. So just think about the artists, the actors, the freelance writers. It's fine if they go to sleep at 3 in the morning and they wake up at noon, and they form a community, and they can adjust that way. The difficulty comes with people who are vulnerable to depression, to clinical depression. It's much more likely if you're an owl that you're going to fall into that trap.
And is that a factor of not having enough sleep?
Nope. Obviously, lack of sleep is going to throw you for a loop. The primary factor is this. Your inner clock is operating, say, 3 hours later than the day-night cycle. The society's pressure is towards conforming with the outer clock, the clock in the wall, the clock on the solar clock, the 24-hour clock outdoors. When the inner clock exerts itself and comes in conflict with the outer clocks, that is the formula for depression. Hmm. So in a way, the sleep loss is a byproduct of this problem.
So setting aside the existence of artificial light just for the time being, talk about the role that natural cycles of light and darkness play in regulating human brain chemistry.
Right. This is the situation under which we evolved and under which we were exposed until several hundred years ago when nighttime lighting came into effect with oil and kerosene and then electricity, the Industrial Age and the Post-Industrial Age. So what was happening is that depending on where you live and what time of year it is, the sun will rise at a certain hour. That signal, the rising sunrise, talks directly to your inner clock. It's stimulating the retina of the eye, and the eye is sending a simple neural connection to the base of the brain, to a nucleus, to a cluster of neurons that comprise the inner clock. And that's the clock I was describing before, which may be cycling at 24 and a half hours. It's this sunrise signal at the end of the night that pulses in to the inner clock and subtracts the time difference, which allows you to synchronize your inner life with the outside world.
Hmm. And why is it that some people are more sensitive to those light shifts than others?
Well, if you are, there are a number of factors involved there. Let's talk for a moment and This is actually a bit of a problem in Texas as well, but it's magnified as you go further north. Let's talk about the outdoor lighting changes that occur with seasonal shifts.
Yes.
What's happening in this season in particular is that the sun is rising later and later. That's happening in Dallas, but it's also happening in more extremely in Minnesota, for example. So this critical lighting signal from the outside world is hitting us later and allowing, and our clock, our inner clock is looking for that signal in order to stay synced with the outside world. Now, it's going to shift later in winter because dawn is coming later. To get back to your question, some people are more vulnerable to this shift than others. And that, we think, is also genetically determined. So the ones who are vulnerable are going to slip later really quickly. They're tracking the later sunrise. And yet they are trying to sleep normal hours to get to work on time at 9 a.m. That is, as I said before, is a formula for depression. And in this case, it's for winter depression or seasonal affective disorder. As far as we can tell, about 50%, half of the U.S. population, has some sensitivity to this winter shift in sunrise. But only about 20% is severely affected. That is, their mood and energy are compromised come the winter months. Their work productivity goes down. Their sexual interests, their libido goes down. They start eating more junk foods and gaining weight. And they start sleeping longer because they're sleeping in. They want, their bodies want to sleep into the later sunrise. It becomes a big chore to get out of bed, especially in a dark bedroom. Hmm. So when this gets even more extreme than the 20% I was talking about, let's now narrow it down to 5%. You have a major depressive disorder, a clinically severe depression that occurs predictably every year when sunrise comes so much later. And it's worse up north than it is down south, but it exists throughout our range of latitudes.
So tell us about light therapy and how that can be used in certain cases to make things better for people who deal with this seasonal affective disorder.
Yes, it's not just seasonal affective disorder. Let's get to that discussion later. But here is where the effect was first clearly demonstrated. So imagine that the sun is now rising at 8 o'clock outside your window, but in midsummer it was rising at 5 o'clock. And your circadian rhythm is drifting later and later, yet you are obligated to wake up at 6:30 or 7 into a dark room in winter. So, and you're becoming depressed. Now, if we come in with artificial light therapy that brings an early morning outdoor level of light to your breakfast table, and you wake up and you spend some time at that lamp, at that bank of lamps before you go to work, what it's doing is it's essentially tricking the nervous system into thinking it's in the alternate season. And you begin waking up earlier refreshed, and the depression lifts. It's as simple as that.
Michael Terman is with us. He's head of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center, and he's co-author of the new book, Chronotherapy, Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Join us at 1-800-933-5372. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. History, literature, and film courses in October take you from Renaissance Italy to the American character. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is head of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center, Michael Turman. He's also co-author of the new book, Chronotherapy, Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Michael, I want to talk a little bit more about what this light therapy is, what this light box is. This is not as simple as, say, ladies sitting down in front of the makeup mirror for 20 minutes. The amount of light and the quality of that light is pretty specific in order to be therapeutic. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a simple technology, but it took years to hone it, to get it working. The level of light that you're getting is similar to what you might experience walking on the beach about 40 minutes after sunrise. Not looking at the sun, of course, but the entire illumination from the sky cover. And you never get that indoors. The best lit architectural spaces, for example, an architect's studio, won't go above about 600 lux. That's the measure of the amount of light your eyes are receiving. And that really stands in the middle of twilight if you're measuring light with a meter outdoors. Whereas 40 minutes after sunrise, you're getting 10,000 lux. And so in order to deliver this kind of enhanced lighting indoors, we have to be very careful about optical considerations and comfort. So you're not looking at these lights. They're not in front of you or below you. They're shining down on you as a simulation of sky cover. They're very carefully diffused because nobody should ever look at a naked light bulb, whether it's fluorescent or incandescent. And the visible wavelengths in this light are distributed broadly across the spectrum. So they look whitish, but they're more of a calming white than a harsh white. And you put these factors together and you have a good method for achieving the light therapy effect.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's speak on the phone now to Pam in Decatur. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I wanted to ask if you've done any research at all into what's referred to as sundowner syndrome that the elderly sometimes are referred to having.
This is in cases of Alzheimer's disease, Pam?
No, not necessarily. It's more like in a nursing home or a retirement home center, and the behavior of the elderly tends to change.
Yeah, it's something that comes along with dementias of all type, and it's a misnomer. The term sound downing is a misnomer because it really can occur at other times of day. But it's referring to a kind of agitated, out-of-control behavior that people in that situation can experience quite frequently, and it can be quite disruptive. So what we've seen among this institutionalized elderly population is that sleep at night becomes quite disruptive, with lots of gaps, and napping during the day, alternating with these agitated periods, becomes much more prevalent. This is one of the reasons that when our parents or grandparents are falling into this late life illness, it becomes difficult for the family to manage the situation at home. So what's been done with light therapy is this. It's a very active and promising field. The light during the day, whether it be from a light therapy box or from a special ceiling installation, is enhanced above the usual levels. And what we're doing again is bringing an outdoor signal indoors to people who may not be getting outdoors at all or on a very limited basis. And when that's done for stretches during the day, we find that the behavioral problems begin to normalize. There's far less napping during the day. The agitation can subside, and sleep at night becomes more coalesced. So this is the name of the game right now in research and development for elder care. And it's a very exciting moment for the field.
So, Michael, what do you say to people who are not necessarily depressed but feel as if they're not getting good sleep and they can't wake up on time or they don't fall asleep well? What does light therapy offer to people whose problems may not rise to the level of depression but are, in fact, disrupting their lives?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question because it's the follow-up question to your question about seasonal affective disorder. Some of us can have this tendency to slip late, regardless of the time of year. And I explained that there was a genetic propensity for this, but also, you know, in the modern urban environment, we're denying ourselves appropriate morning light exposure. So our clocks can slip later all year round. And if you are tending toward this owl state, you're going to experience something that you might call insomnia. I just can't fall asleep, even though I know I have to. You may be, actually, you may wind up going to a doctor's office asking for sleeping pills, which is not the right solution to this problem. So just like a patient who is experiencing a full-blown winter depression will correct the problem by taking light therapy at the end of his or her internal night, which may be 7 a.m. for some people, 8 a.m. for others, 9 a.m. for others, depending on your chronotype. The same thing applies for people who are having this kind of insomnia all year round. Their clocks are chronically pushing late. And by building in this morning light exposure routine, they can shift earlier, even within days, even over a weekend, preparing for the next week. The sleep onset can come naturally earlier by an hour or more if you time the lights correctly. And I would love to explain how to time the lights correctly.
Sure.
We have an internal night, and we have an external night. My internal night might be running from 1 a.m. to 9 a.m., even though the clock on the wall says by 9 a.m. it's already morning. So that internal night is is representing the physiological rhythm dictated by our brain. If you have a late internal night, you need light therapy at a different hour than someone who has an earlier internal night. And our nights can differ from person to person by, believe it or not, as much as 6 hours.
Wow.
Within the normal population. So in order to know how to make light therapy work for you, you have to find out where your internal night is sitting. And the way to do that conveniently is with an online automated questionnaire I developed for the Center for Environmental Therapeutics. That's www.cet.org. It's called a Morningness Eveningness Questionnaire. obviously enough. And when you answer these questions, it finds out where your inner clock is sitting, and that may be totally different from when you are actually sleeping and waking up.
Well, it's funny. I took the quiz online and was very surprised. It was different, and I thought I knew myself pretty well. I typically go to bed about 10:30 or 11, and the quiz said my body wants me to go to sleep at 11:45, and that if I did light therapy, it ought to be at 6:30 in the morning.
Exactly. And so you'll find out that target point for beginning light therapy, and that's where you get the therapeutic action. That's what's bringing your internal clock into synchrony with your sleep cycle.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Edward in Arlington. Hi, Edward.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I'd like to know if he can speak to reversed AMPM cortisol levels, carbohydrates, and their effect on cortisol, and genetic predispositions to cortisol, especially via the hippocampus affecting HPA axis. It may be totally off his realm, but just in case. Thanks.
Well, I'm going to reduce your question to something simple. From the vantage point of chronobiology and chronotherapy, normally if we wake up at the end of our inner clock's night, we get a high burst of cortisol, which is actually helping us to wake up and is priming us for the day ahead. If that isn't happening, if there's mismatches between the circadian clock and the way you're sleeping, you can find this patterning of awakening or activating cortisol coming at totally unexpected and abnormal hours. Take an extreme owl, for example. I've worked with patients who cannot go to sleep until 5 or 6 in the morning, even with sleeping pills.
Oh, that's awful.
They are living way out. They're living past Hawaii in geographic time. They're living somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. If you were to measure their cortisol bursts, their physiological preparation for the day ahead, they would be high at night rather than in the morning. And so that is an increasingly common diagnostic method for looking at these aberrations, but it's not the clearest method. The clearest method is really based on the hormone we produce at night by our pineal gland, and that's the melatonin hormone. And if you're an owl, you're not going to make melatonin until later than somebody who's a hummingbird or a lark. And there are actually blood tests to do this, so that we can specify the disorder more clearly that way. It's not so clear-cut with cortisol measurements.
Let's talk about this. People hear melatonin, and you can buy this at Walgreens or any pharmacy, but you don't recommend most of the over-the-counter preparations of this synthetic hormone.
Yeah, melatonin is just a very inappropriately dosed. You have to think of melatonin, the nighttime hormone, as a physiological signal of night, not as a sleeping pill. And your body starts to make melatonin naturally about 2 hours before you begin to feel sleepy and ready for bed, which means melatonin is already widely in the circulation by the time you're ready to go to bed. If you take a melatonin tablet at that hour, it doesn't make much difference because your body is already doing it. And that's why melatonin has been so controversial as a sleep-inducing agent. Our research for the past decade, actually, has focused on a very contrasting use of the melatonin hormone at tiny, tiny doses, much, much lower than you get off the shelf at the drugstore. If you take it hours before the brain starts to make melatonin, it sends a signal to the inner clock, and it says, hey guy, nighttime is here. Move your timing closer to me, closer to the time I'm taking this tiny dose of melatonin. Mm. And as a result, it becomes easier to go to sleep somewhat later, but it's still going to be hours later than you take what we're calling this microdose of melatonin.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have an email here from Max in North Dallas who says, regarding jet lag, could you talk about eastward versus westward time shifts? Eastward shifts are said to be more easily adjusted to. Also, how do hormonal and body temperature cycles adjust?
You got it wrong, my friend. Eastward cycles are much tougher to adjust to for most people. Unless you're an extreme lark type. As I explained earlier, our inner clocks are usually running at longer than 24 hours. So they will tend to adjust to a later time zone much more rapidly than to an earlier time zone. So here I am in New York City talking to you. And I'm going to fly out to Dallas. I will be adjusted easily within one day because my clock is going to slip into Dallas time effortlessly. But if I'm traveling in the opposite direction, it creates a challenge. My inner clock is trying to push later, while the outside world is trying to push me an hour or 2 hours or 6 hours earlier. And that is where the major jet lag challenge falls.
Well, hang on to that thought. We'll come back to this in just a minute. My guest is Michael Turman. He's head of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center. And he's author of the new book, Chronotherapy, Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. History, literature, and film courses in October take you from Renaissance Italy to the American character. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. I'm speaking this hour with Michael Turman of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center. He's co-author of the new book, Chronotherapy, Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Michael, before the break, we heard from Max, who emailed to ask about jet lag. What do you recommend to those of us who have to travel east and want to be conscious the first 2 or 3 days we're there?
First of all, good luck. second of all, the critical thing is to realize that your inner clock doesn't know that you've taken a trip. Mm-hmm. So as you travel a huge distance, your inner clock still thinks it's in Dallas. Now, let's say you take a deep breath and take a nonstop flight to Paris from Dallas. You're landing, and it's morning in Paris. What is it in Dallas? It's the middle of your night. If you go out into the bright sunshine in Paris the moment you've landed, your clock is going to move in a way that is opposite to the direction of Paris time.
Huh.
You're going to make things worse. So one handy technique to handle such jet lag is to protect your eyes from a specific kind of light that you get in that you get from early morning sunlight, and we call that technically short wavelength light. And if you look at that subjectively, that is the blue and the violet component of white light. That kind of light energy is inputting your internal clock. And in the morning in Paris time, it's telling it to move in the wrong direction because your clock thinks it's still in Dallas.
Hmm.
So if you wear a special filtering glasses or even dark sunglasses until noon or 1 p.m. after you arrive, you're preventing that jet lag disruption from happening. And you would continue to do that for 2 or 3 days after arrival. It doesn't prevent you from going outside, but it protects your internal, it allows your internal clock to make the adjustment to Paris time more quickly, and therefore it's going to reduce the upset feelings, the disorientation, the digestive issues that are so common in jet lag. So there's one trick.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Jerry on the line next in Dallas. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
It's a great book, and I really enjoyed reading it. You know, there have been a lot of changes in the way we light our houses in the last few years as we've gone away from incandescent bulbs to fluorescent and then halogen and with all the energy conservation. Are there any differences in the kind of lighting? And do you foresee that your work will eventually lead us to totally rethink of how we light our houses?
We're going, it's a good question. First of all, I have to say, a photon is a photon is a photon. That is, it doesn't matter where it's coming from. What does matter is the density or the level of photons that you're receiving at your eyes and whether they're presented in a way that's causing aversive visual glare and whether you're only getting enough to replicate twilight outdoors rather than daylight. So the configuration of lamps that would achieve this can come in all varieties, but they have to be carefully designed by lighting engineers. I think that the major issue in our current lifestyle is that we're not lighting up the house enough in the morning, and we're lighting it up too much in the evening. Because that evening light is telling our inner clocks to shift later than they already are. Now, that doesn't mean we want to spend evenings in a dark room, but we do want to lower the level of lights. And that includes even light that we're getting from the television and from the computer screen. So as we refine this concept for indoor living, what we want to do is rebalance the way we see indoor light, boosting it in the morning and minimizing it in the hours before we're going to go to sleep.
Here's a related email from Don, who says, I've read several articles about blue light from TV and computer screens suppressing melatonin production needed for sleep. Some authors have suggested wearing blue-blocking glasses a few hours before going to bed to offset the blue impact. Is there robust research evidence to support the amber glass recommendation? And if so, what's the optimal protocol as to the eyeglass quality and the timing?
Very nicely phrased, and that's one of the recommendations in my book, indeed. There's strong evidence toward an inhibiting effect on melatonin by light late in the evening. As I explained earlier, about 2 hours before you're feeling sleepy to go to bed, your pineal gland is starting to produce melatonin for the night ahead. That's the nighttime hormone. And if you are exposed to a bright light, especially light with this short wavelength or blue component in it, it's going to signal the pineal gland to shut down. because the pineal gland is active at night, and you're giving it a daytime signal, and it's going to shut down and stop making melatonin. That can be disruptive to sleep. Just as I explained for jet lag, if you wear glasses that have been filtered for this disruptive light, you can maintain perfectly acute vision throughout the evening hours, but it has subtracted out the blue component, and therefore your melatonin will be able to rise. Now, I've had some patients with severe insomnia who can go to sleep earlier within one day on the same evening that they put on these amber blue blockers in the evening. So that needs to be tested for each individual, of course, but the research data are strong on that point.
We have an email here from Wes who writes, I have a good friend with bipolar disorder. He has described to me the serious relationship between good sleep and an ordered mind. Conversely, if he goes 4 or 5 nights with 4 or fewer hours, he tends to go into a hypomanic state, and if this is not addressed, he can go into a full-blown mania. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Bipolar disorder is really devastating to experience. For the majority of time, you're usually in a very deep funk. That is, you're usually on the depressed side of the equation. When that happens, your inner clock is slipping later. So we've actually been using light therapy to control that predominant depressive swing in bipolar disorder. Now, there's a chicken and the egg problem concerning the switches. We're not exactly sure whether the shortened sleep that's associated with the switch to the opposite state, the switch high, is causing the switch or is part of the switch. And it becomes very important when using light therapy for a patient with bipolar disorder also to be using a mood stabilizing medication such as lithium, because that is going to make it far less likely for the presentation of light to result in shorter sleep and a bipolar switch high, the manic switch, which is, of course, extremely dangerous. So light therapy is now being widely used by patients with bipolar disorder while depressed. But we have to take that precaution to allay the likelihood of a manic switch with mood-stabilizing medication at the same time. A person with bipolar disorder should not be using light therapy without a mood stabilizer, and that needs to be supervised by a doctor. This is not something for self-treatment.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak next with Charlena in Richardson. Hi, Charlena.
Hi, Chris. I actually was really interested in this topic because my 4 children never want to go to sleep. And I was wondering, you know, I've tried the whole keeping the lights dim after 7 o'clock, and it's, what can I do to optimize, you know, their sleep cycle, getting them to get a good night's sleep and waking up fresh in the morning? You know, none of them is able to hear the alarm clock. It can buzz for an hour, and they can't hear it. And they range in age 4 to 10. So what can I do to kind of get them, you know, on a good routine?
Thanks,
well,
Michael.
It's an interesting point because your kids are still so young. They haven't undergone puberty yet. And once that happens, the situation you're describing now is going to become even worse. And so now's the time to make a practical adjustment so that they can handle the sleep pattern of adolescence less disruptively. I think the secret is here not only to dim evening lights, including on the computer games that they're playing at night, but also to arrange for therapeutic levels of light before they leave the house for school. Really important. That's going to have a feedback effect, which will create earlier sleepiness on the nights that follow. And it really needs to be built in habitually. It has to be what one does after brushing one's teeth and sitting down for breakfast every day.
So it's not a matter of you reset and then the reset sticks after that. You have to continue the same habits.
It's a maintenance regimen. And I suspect that our caller or her husband or their parents have genetically transmitted this propensity toward late sleep to the kids. It's something they're going to have to face their whole life.
Talk, Michael, about some of the other areas of medical science that this kind of light therapy research might be applied to that are being explored right now.
It's ever increasing. We edged on that a few minutes ago when talking about dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and it's been shown now that the progression of demented thinking, of loss of cognition, can actually be markedly slowed by appropriate application of chronotherapy. There have been some impressive studies on depression that occurs during pregnancy. Pregnancy is a period where you really want to be careful about using antidepressant meds.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, it's hazardous to the fetus and the baby to have a mom who has been depressed. On the other hand, the medications themselves may be passing to the baby and causing ill effect, like lower birth weight. And here we've shown that the use of light therapy during pregnancy can greatly relieve the problem and reduce the drug burden. Another application is in eating disorders. And here the research is quite clear-cut, although the application in the field has not yet spread. Take a person who is ingesting huge amounts of food and purging. This is bulimia.
We have just a few seconds left here.
Yeah. You can reduce the frequency of bulimia and purging by 50% by doing light therapy.
Michael Turman is head of the Center for Light Treatment and Biological Rhythms at Columbia University Medical Center. His new book is called Chronotherapy, Resetting Your Inner Clock to Boost Mood, Alertness, and Quality Sleep. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
A great pleasure. Thank you, too.
Today's show was engineered by Justin Martin. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. You can learn more about the show and download the podcast for free at kera.org/think. Always email comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.